Women Worldwide with Deirdre Breckenridge introduces incredible stories shared by women across the globe who have experienced the great heights of success and, at times, the agony of defeat. With a vision to impart wisdom and advice on how to tackle barriers and soar to new heights, the show uncovers different perspectives to help you find your inner strength and to power up your own voice so you can excel in life.
Hi, everyone. I'm Deirdre Breckenridge. Thanks for tuning into another episode of Women Worldwide. Today's show is going to take us in a few interesting directions, from memory improvement and self-directed learning all the way to artificial intelligence and robotics. And I've got a special guest joining me on the show who has expertise in these areas. So let me just introduce Dave Farrow, who first started his career by promoting a program for memory improvement that actually landed him in the Guinness Book of World Records. Dave is an entrepreneur, and he's an expert at self-directed learning and accelerated learning, teaching others how to improve their chances for success in life with simple, fun, and effective skills and techniques. He's also the founder and CEO of Farrow Communications, which promotes author experts and their other newsworthy clients. So there's a lot more about Dave, but I think it's time for him to share his journey with you. So Dave, it's great to have you on my show. Welcome.
It's great to be on the show. I think the most interesting thing is that I'm a guy on Women Worldwide. I love this. I'm getting in touch with my feminine side today. This is wonderful.
Well, that's wonderful. Yes. So we're finding that having men on the show, offering passion, advice, sharing challenges is good for everyone as well, women and men. So we're happy to have you on the show. And, you know, Dave, I'm actually sitting here right now with your Farrow method because I mentioned that you have this program for
that's great. I'm sitting here with your book, Answers to Modern Communicators, and I was leafing through it while I was waiting for the interview, and I got to admit I'm jealous of your writing ability. This is quite a good read.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate you saying that. Well, I haven't used the CDs yet, but I'm going to dive into the Farrow method.
that's because nobody uses CDs anymore. We do have an, like, I gave you that for obviously because we have they actually still sell internationally. So, you know, but we sold millions of dollars worth of these programs. But of course, awesome. You know, technology has moved forward. So we do have an online version. And I believe we have a username and password for you. And the online version is actually even better because it's interactive. You know, it scores
that's
you
great.
And assesses you and stuff like that. But I wanted to get you the original because that's really what made my career. You know, I sold, I believe it's estimated over 100,000 units of those, of these memory products. And we did it with what we're talking about here. And of course, you know, my primary consumers, as we know, who dominates the consumer market, were female. So it definitely, you know, fits into the show as well.
Yeah, this is really cool. I mean, Dave, who wouldn't want to triple their memory, activate your photographic memory? I mean, these are all things. I'm always amazed at people who say that they can read anything and then remember it. You know, I watch Suits, so I binge on Netflix, and Mike Ross, I don't know if you watch this, but yep. He can read anything and knows everything. So maybe you could just kind of let us know a little bit about how you started to market and promote your program, and then how you ended up in the Guinness Book of World Records.
Well, the first thing was credibility. It is interesting. Like, you could Google me now, and I don't think I get anybody who challenges the credibility of my system now. But certainly in the beginning, you know, I'm going back 20 years or so. I was tremendously challenged that you could improve your memory with exercises. And the reason was that neuroscience, the scientific community had not caught up to the reality. Without getting too technical of it, there was two models of the brain over the last 20 years. The first model was the idea of the hardwired brain. This is where people were talking about, oh, I'm hardwired for smoking or negativity, or one of the worst was criminal behavior. And then that was debunked. It was based on bad science, no doubt about it. But it was the scientific consensus for a good 10, almost 15 years. I was talking about what we now know of as the real model of the brain, which is brain plasticity, which basically says that your brain is constantly changing based on the exercises and activities that you do. But I got a lot of flack on that because the mnemonic techniques and brain training was well ahead of the scientific community at that time. But it was actually, even in those days, they didn't even call it neuroscience. They called it neurology. You know, and I'm talking 1996 when I made my first website. I think that was the beginning of the internet anyways. But, you know, that's when I first got my Guinness record in memory, mainly for credibility because, you know, I'm not a doctor, but I'm one of the most practiced at these techniques and I'm really, really damn good at teaching it. And you really can improve your memory by changing how you think, thinking about information differently, doing little mental tricks. And in fact, it's a lot of fun. But the first step was really credibility. So that's when I realized that I had to really go for something really big. And the Guinness record was that. And I strongly suggest if anybody is out there thinking that there's a task that they want to do to put them on the map, I strongly suggest you go for it. Because even if you fail, you're better off for it. Even an attempt and a failure is far better than wishing you had.
Yeah, I mean, this is amazing. So two questions to follow up. First off, what did you actually have to do to get into the Guinness Book of World Records? So what was it that they made you do so that you could hold that title?
Sure. Well, there was a record for memory and it was kind of, this is in the time of the movie Rain Man and man, I'm really dating myself because that's an old movie even now and most people don't know it. But this was the idea that there were a handful of people that were uber geniuses and they were these anomalies, right? So there was some people didn't know that some of these quote unquote uber geniuses were actually people who taught themselves how to run their brain. They taught themselves mnemonics. So essentially I found in the Guinness Book of Records, somebody who was in England, who was memorizing decks of playing cards. He did it on a Japanese show. He memorized six decks of cards and I trained and I said, oh, you know, I can, you know, do that. And then I contacted the Guinness Book of Records to make my application. And I found out that he had recently broken the record. In fact, a few people had broken the record and it was up to 40 decks of cards, 40.
Oh my gosh. That's
awesome. I was floored, but I thought, you know what, if another human being can do this, then I can do it. And I figured out a method to basically, it's actually a form of encryption where I basically memorize five cards as one image. And then it cut down my work to a fifth of what I had to do. But the really difficult part about this record is that you have to be able to do it within a very, very tight margin of error. You're only allowed 0.5% wrong out of 3,068 cards. It's my first record was 59 decks. So it's about a little over 2,000 cards, 2,704. But my second record in 2009 was for 59 decks. And the goal really was that this is such a difficult thing to do. I just wanted to blow it out of the water so nobody else tries it for a long time.
You know?
Like it sounds impressive to go from 40 decks to I attempted 52.
Yeah.
But I was just like, if I just did like 42, then the next year I'd have to do it again. And we'd be like, but if I just like do it like 12
just
decks
up
more,
the game.
Yeah, if I do really, then I'll hold on to it. I held on to it until like 2009 when I had to break it again. So the strategy worked out, you know, aim much higher than your competition and you'll scare them, hopefully.
Yeah, aim big. Okay, so my second question is, you know that saying, you can't teach an old dog new tricks, which I don't believe in. So
yeah.
Can you change your memory, increase your memory, improve it at any age?
Well, first of all, I want to actually answer your previous question properly. I didn't outline because a lot of people get confused by this. Yes, I'm in order to get the Guinness Book of Records, I memorized the exact order of first 52 and then in 2009, 59 decks of playing cards, and they were all shuffled together. They weren't separate packs. And then they were all shuffled together with actually volunteers and people supervising and two cameras on me at all times and a lot of, you know, security, believe it or not, for this. And then I had to recall it with basically 90 9.5% accuracy. So not 95, but 99.5% accuracy. If I got any more wrong, I'd lose the whole thing. So my latest record in 2009, I did 59 decks of cards, and I was actually planning originally 62 to do the 52 and then 10 more, but two of the decks had red backs, so it led me to 60. But I knew from like doing a lot of radio interviews, if I memorized 60 decks of cards, people would think I meant 16. And I had to, you know, so I did 59 to make it like a number that would work well on radio. So there's planning ahead a little bit, but I did it with only one error out of 3,068 cards. So I was very proud of that. And that's just hard work and good technique. But to answer your question, can anybody improve their memory at any time? Yes. The data is actually very, very conclusive on this. It used to be controversial, but there's been, when the scientific community shifted over to a brain plasticity model as the consensus, then a ton of studies were done on brain plasticity, and we've learned a whole lot. In fact, veterans basically people over 50 have taught us a lot about the brain, where typically they were not studied. A lot of times brain research used grad students because they were on hand at colleges and universities. They were easy to get a hold of. There's one study actually in 2014, 2015 that was published in JAMA, Journal of the American Medical Association, that was very conclusive. Over 2,000 people, many of them well over 50 years old, started brain training sometimes in their 60s and things like that. But they aggregated all the data and they found that almost at any age, when you actually start doing proper brain training, you cut your risk for memory loss as you age dramatically. The study suggested that you could expect as much as a 50% decrease in risk for Alzheimer's or other, you know, memory loss related issues.
That's amazing. Yeah. That's first, I'm still stuck on the 99.5%. That you got right.
But in a way, that was the best thing ever. Like, I hated it at the time, but that's, I found out recently that a lot of quote unquote memory gurus and memory people around the world, because the field has opened up considerably since I first started. But they weren't able to break my record. So it actually, the accuracy actually really helped me, because they do a lot of speed memory. And as a result, they make a few more mistakes my record hasn't been broken. So it's really nice.
Yeah. I can't imagine anybody doing more than 59 decks of cards. that's quite.
It'll be over 100 at some point. I could probably do over 100 if I really, you know, stopped everything and focused wholeheartedly on it and trained and everything and got into it. But as you know, I'm running a few businesses and everything. So as you get older and you have kids and you have, you know, other businesses and everything, you know, perhaps I'll break it. If somebody breaks it back, then I'll have to, you know, come out of retirement and do it. Yeah.
So, you know, speaking of your other businesses, you mm-hmm. launched Faro PR and you just rebranded to Faro Communications. Mm-hmm. So what was behind the launch? Why a communications firm? How did you get there?
Well, the interesting thing is, this is really what I recommend when I'm coaching people on business, and what I've heard from some of the greats out there is, you know, When you make a business, the arrogance is to believe that you're at the center of the universe and you're choosing everything. But I really think a business should be grown organically based on what the customers want. So I often say I never even intended to become a PR guy, but I was able to get far more PR for myself as the memory guy than I had heard any of the PR gurus that I was even, you know, listening to at the time. So I've been on well over 2,000 interviews. It's much over that now. That was as of 2009 even. I've been on like Dr. Oz twice, Regis and Kelly. I memorized the studio audience. I just did Superhuman on Fox, Steve Harvey, Science Channel, Discovery Channel, That's BBC, cool. a CBC documentary. Yeah. So I was able to get all this press, but I was also able to make it pay. You know, when I was on Dr. Oz, I made about $50,000 in sales on my website. So and as you know, from doing PR, you rarely get a direct response. Right. You go on to a show, even a highly rated show, and it'll improve your book sales, but it'll happen mm-hmm. more organically and everything. And I was able to get people to run to my website and buy things. And that's really helped fuel my PR business, because I had just a ton of entrepreneurs and authors and experts say, how did you do it? Show me your secrets. So I started teaching. It was very natural because I taught memory techniques. So I see myself as a teacher. First and foremost, that's my, I guess, self-classification. So I taught, you know, marketing and PR, and then, you know, some people were having difficulty with what I was showing them. So I started doing things for people, and I'm only one person. So I started to hire people, and now I've got about 8 employees, depending on how you judge some of the contractors, maybe more. Yeah, we do PR for everything from startups, brick and mortar businesses, some online businesses, and I'd say at least half of our business is author experts. So people who are speakers and authors, you know, they come to us, and we offer very affordable ways to get a large number of bookings. You know,
and things have changed so much. I mean, I know personally, right, being in PR. So I want to bridge over because technology. I mean, I know you're. Toolkit, definitely Marketing PR Toolkit has changed since 10 years ago.
Absolutely.
But you are very into technology.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you shared a recent passion with me around artificial intelligence and robotics. Is that just because you naturally found this through your teaching and learning and, you know, pivoting into PR and marketing? Where does AI fit in for you?
Yeah. So it is kind of an interesting thing. So I founded a company called Farobot, and we're working on an animatronic mannequin, essentially. So it's a out of the box robot that is still in the realm of marketing, though, because it's meant to be, you know, in a store or at a conference or something and attract eyeballs, bring people to your booth. But yeah, from the very beginning, I've wanted to be really on the cutting edge of technology. That's why we changed from Faro PR to Faro Communications recently, because we're offering social media services. We're writing articles for people, you know, working on their books with them or doing coaching on branding. And by the way, I love your take on branding in the book, by the way. You really go in depth on what branding is in far more depth, I think, than a lot of other people do. And I would agree with you on a bunch of those points. We can talk about that another time. So, you know, when we started doing that, I also launched the website brainhackers.com because I didn't want to just, you know, quit my memory day job and now I'm a PR guy and that's, you know, that's not authentic. Right. So I still speak on memory. I was on Fox Superhuman just a year ago. And won the grand prize for episode 5. It went out to 60 million viewers. Yeah, it was a $50,000 grand prize. It's not bad, too.
That's really good. So I don't watch that show. So what did you have to do?
It was kind of a test of brains. Mike Tyson was one of the judges. It was kind of fun on there. And it was a test of brains between, you know, like a math whiz and a memory guy and things like that. An IQ person and everything. We each did a feat and then the audience voted. It was like it's a one time thing. It doesn't have a repeat. It's kind of a reality TV show thing. It was really, really, it was really great. I bought a house with that as a down payment. So it's really good. Now I've got some properties. So I'm kind of leveraged.
You're an outcome guy.
Yeah, there you go. I'm no fool. But again, it was driven by what the customers wanted. So customers were coming up to me just like you are, you know, and you're saying, you know, hey, you were really good at PR. Show me PR. And then they say, well, you know, and hey, your social media is really tight. You're doing things I'm not doing. Can you show me that? And then we start, you know, offering services on that. And hey, you know, look at our website. You can look at our website, farocommunications.com. We made our own website and we've made websites for people. And so now we're starting quoting out bigger website and bigger website production deals. So what I think I'm really good and what my core competency has been, aside from the memory, I guess, is that I really understand people and that leads to, you know, doing a good interview, doing sales properly, understanding a sales process. But also I think it helps when it comes to managing and getting in new talent. And I didn't personally make these websites, but I've got a hell of a team that's managed really well and everybody contributes their part and the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. But I will say this though, the robot project is almost all mine. I've had a bit of help just for like setting up my shop and things like that, but that's actually a passion. I got into design engineering because when you have this memory, you kind of want to use it. You know what I mean? And I think we're going to get into it in the second half. But essentially, I started with just some design engineering. I did some stuff with the National Research Council of Canada. I spent about 2-3 years working on a nanotech project that didn't really work go anywhere, but I learned a lot, and I lost a bit of money in that venture. Actually, I started a biotech company, but I've always been had a curious mind, and because of my memory ability, I've been able to learn very, very quickly. So I taught myself robotics and computer science, and especially design. And I've made this this design. We're going to be filing for several patents, but the main thing is that it's a low cost animatronic. We're going to have a robot for less than $10,000 somebody can get and use, where normally you'd be starting at $100,000 if you're looking at animatronics. Think like Disney World and things like that. I think we'll get into it in the next segment.
Yeah, this is all really exciting. And just knowing the fact that memory and this self-training, self-directed learning can actually help you to make that leap into something like robotics, which you didn't know about before. So Dave, I'm just going to ask you to hold your thoughts for a moment. We're going to take a super quick break, give some love to our sponsor. And I also want to mention that Women Worldwide is on the C-Suite Radio Network. And you can find all of our shows at c-suiteradio.com. And while you're there, be sure to check out all the other great business podcasts as well.
You have been listening to Women Worldwide with your host, Deirdre Breckenridge. Segment 2 is coming right up.
Creating brand loyalty requires a unique blend of strategic communication and innovative technology. Pure Performance Communications works with businesses to move their audiences from awareness to action and impact by offering a digital marketing roadmap. Let us help you foster deeper engagement and forge stronger relationships along the way. Visit us at pureperformancecom.com. That's pureperformancecom with 2 M's.com.
Now back to Women Worldwide with your host, Deirdre Breckenridge.
I'm Deirdre Breckenridge. Welcome back to the show. Dave Farrow and I were talking about his incredible memory that landed him in the Guinness Book of World Records because he memorized, first it was 52 decks of cards and then 59. So, Dave, you're absolutely amazing. And, you know, we were just talking about how you even used your memory to learn, to get into robotics and your animatronics and what you're doing. I do want to pivot a little bit more to you. I mean, this journey has been incredible from, you know, your memory program to how you used what you did to launch Farrow PR into Farrow Communications, and now Farrow Bot. Right. So what have you learned the most about yourself through this entire journey?
Well, I'll be honest with you, and I'll be a little vulnerable, I guess. But I got to tell you that, you know, part of the reason for the passion in technology, of course, I have a natural curiosity, but a lot of it was also I think a lot of us can relate to, you know, we're in our field and we're really smart at what we do, but we see other fields and other realms and we think, wow, I'd like to, you know, play in that sandbox a little bit. And we think that that's not okay in our society. You know, everyone wants to be pigeonholed and specialists get paid more and everything. And for me, I actually had the opposite effect where I had a bunch of people coming up to me going, well, can you memorize anything other than playing cards? You know, and I got that so much, it kind of annoyed me. So I became kind of, you know, really passionate about just learning science and technology so I could you know, play in those sandboxes. And then I found that I had an aptitude for it. And it really made me think, you know, philosophically, I'm in my 40s now, so I'm kind of looking back a little bit. It really made me think that, you know, if I wasn't a little bit embarrassed back then or, you know, trying to, I don't know, be a young guy trying to prove something, you know, ego wise, you know, I wonder if I wouldn't have even, you know, dipped my toe into a field that I happen to be really good at, you know, and I wonder how many other people are out there in the same boat where they have tremendous potential, and maybe they're afraid, or they don't think they're smart enough, or they just, you know, life's too busy and they don't pursue it. And I'm really glad I did.
Yeah. I mean, we're glad that you did too. Absolutely. Are you still working hard to increase your memory? Do you do exercises, or do you get to a certain point where there's only so much that you can do because your memory is that good?
No, certainly. And there are certainly people who are, I don't know if it's better, but they're certainly faster than me, especially some of the younger people in the game. That we actually run memory competitions every year. It's worked through brainhackers.com. And also it's in association with the World Memory Championship Council, which is a worldwide organization that does memory competitions around the world. There was 600 people in Singapore last year at the last one.
Like a physical event?
Yeah, it's like the Olympics. People come from far and wide and they go into a conference center for several days. Ours are a little shorter. Like I have one coming up in Florida, actually, in October. People could talk to me about that. And that's going to be, we're going to have about 100 people there from all ages. And people, you know, practice and train in memory techniques. So there's a handful of people, obviously, that do this. It's a small group, but there are some people I would think that are better than me and could even break my record if they really tried. But as for me, I actually have found that the best thing for me in the past was to set goals. So I would set a goal like a Guinness record or, learning Cantonese or Mandarin when I was living in Chinatown in Toronto. And I'd have goals like that. And that was really good when I was younger. As I'm older, what I find is habits work better for me. And I don't know if somebody else is the opposite or whatever, but I find I'm not aspiring so much to be somewhere. I'm very comfortable where I am, but every single day I'm doing a little bit. I'm doing a little memory work. I'm doing a little something as part of a regular routine. And I find that I'm really sharp. And of course, I'm learning new things. I'm actually learning things so I can teach my son now. My son's just 4 years old, but I'm talking to him about atoms and molecules and the periodic table and I will admit even economic theory.
Do you see how his memory is getting better if you're sharing these techniques or you're teaching him? Can you tell at age four?
He's not old enough to learn memory techniques. Memory techniques are things you have to do on purpose. You have to say, okay, I'm seeing these, like, I'll give you an example. You can see a whole string of numbers, say like a 20 digit number. A memory technique would be to turn that into a color code and then paint a picture using those colors in a certain order. And that is a very simple way that you can memorize 20 numbers. Whereas if they just stayed as numbers in your mind, it'd be very difficult. So it's usually involving some sort of code or method that he's just too young. He doesn't know all his numbers. Well, he knows his numbers 1 to 10, but he doesn't know like 1 to 100 yet, right? Mm-hmm. So what we're doing with him essentially is making it fun, you know, like the different letters. If you want to know what to do for a child at that age, he's really into superheroes. So, you know, H is for Hulk and V is for Venom. And S is for Superman or Spider-Man, depending on which one he likes each day, you know, and I is for Iron Man and mm-hmm. that
guy. Associated with things he likes.
Exactly. And that's like a basic concept. Make an abstract concept like a letter more than just an abstract concept. Make it mean something deeper. And that's essentially what memory techniques do, except they're much more organized and strategic, and there's a whole system to it when you get up to the higher levels. When you want to memorize, say, like 100 formulas for chemistry or something, there's a step-by-step way to do it so you know you won't forget any of it. But it's just it's essentially that sort of thing. I can give the basic principle behind the memory techniques and why they work is that there's some things that your brain does not need repetition to memorize. Now, we know this, actually. We don't think of it a lot, but we know this. If you've ever been involved in an accident or involved in a, you see like a funny joke or a YouTube video that's just a crazy event that happens, something crazy like that. In those situations, your brain wakes up and it bypasses the usual routes to help you store information instantaneously in your long-term memory. The theory is based around the reticular activating filter and that your brain basically filters out a lot of what you experience because we experience a lot of information. If you were to take
too much.
Yeah. If you were to take everything you see and everything you hear every single day, you try to put it on a hard drive, you'd fill up that space really quickly. Right. So that's the idea, is that your brain figures out what is important. Well, the problem is your brain uses different rules than we use. So phone numbers, names, formulas, foreign language vocabulary, these are not important to your brain. Your brain is looking for survival based stuff. You know, where's that dog that barked at me? I'm going to remember where it was every single time when I crossed the street in that spot. You know, when I nearly got hit by a car on that corner. Well, I'm going to remember
that more careful
every single time. Yeah. And that's what your brain thinks is important, because it's for survival. And what we do with memory techniques is we kind of trick the brain into using that mechanism for other stuff, for wordplay, for languages, for names, for, you know, numbers and things like that. That's essentially the mechanism, and it works really well. And you know, I love doing it. But yeah, I do a little bit every day just to stay sharp too.
So for somebody who never forgets a face, but has trouble with names, think of, you know, all those PR and marketing professionals out there networking at conferences, right? And you meet so many people and maybe they're listening. What is it that you can do, if you can give a quick tip, that might make you remember the name of the people you meet?
First things first is relax. And I mean that in two different ways. Physically relax, because your brain works essentially whenever you have a stress hormone going through your brain, it tends to shut down centers of activity. Your stress, your brain interprets as a potential for fight or flight, right? Mm-hmm. So you want to shut down what's not necessary. Like, you don't need math and science when you're running from a bear, right? You know what I mean? So there's actually something called like amygdala hijacking that happens when you get really, really stressed. So it shuts down a lot of the prefrontal cortex and, more and more powerful parts of the brain. But even a slight amount of stress can make you very forgetful. Everyone's had that situation where you're put on the spot, you draw a blank, and then after the stress is gone, after the person leaves or the embarrassment is over or the exam is over and you're walking down the hallway, instantly you remember the answer, you know?
Right.
That's
coming back to you.
Yeah. That's not an accident. That's a stress response. If you can control your stress response, you're going to have a much better memory. The other thing also is just relax in a sense that don't try to be perfect. I, even me, I'm in the Guinness Book of Records and I make mistakes and people would attest to that. You're not going to be perfect because you're not a robot. You know, when I do want to memorize a list of things, I've memorized hundreds of people's names in an audience. And yeah, when I do networking, I tend to show off and I'll memorize everybody's name that I meet. But sometimes I'll hear it wrong, or, you know, like there'll be like minor mistakes that'll come in. Give yourself some slack, because just making the attempt to remember the names is probably more than a lot of people are doing. So a lot of people are in the same boat. But if you relax a little bit, it'll actually help a lot. And I mean, the other major technique for names that is the strategy is to turn that name into something you can visualize. And this actually goes into some of our logo stuff. If you see me and my name is Dave Pharaoh, well, you'll probably forget that pretty quick. But if I went to a costume party dressed as an Egyptian pharaoh,
you'd remember.
Yeah. Well, aside from in today's day and age, it might be cultural appropriation or something. I don't know. But I actually used to use that analogy to help people remember my names. But this is when we were using like analogy, like Bob is a bobby pin, Michael is a microphone, like things like that. Obviously, it's not just a cultural thing. It's more just like objects. You want to make an object that helps you remember the name. So
this leads into your new logo.
Yeah, and the thing is, I went as the Pharaoh of Memory for the longest time. Man, it improved sales tremendously. Even though it was cheesy and everything, as the memory guy on college campuses, they loved it, and people remembered me for years. They remember the Egyptian kind of connotation. But it's a bit cheesy for corporate, obviously. So we decided to switch over to Fair Communications, and we really dwelled on what to do in a logo. And I realized that I wanted to do a play on words. I wanted the F for Pharaoh. And my name is basically spelled F with an arrow, basically. Mm-hmm. A-R-R-O-W. So I thought if I could make an F with an arrow coming out of it, that would be the ultimate logo. And we sent it out to a lot of graphic designers, and even my in-house graphic designer, you know, made a few tweaks at the end. And I'm very proud of what we came up with, because it's kind of a hidden arrow. You don't see it, but it's the negative space of the F creates the arrow. And then once you do see it, you never forget it. So that's right. That's a mnemonic.
It registers in the brain.
Right. And that helps people remember my name. And it works like a charm. And I'll tell you, great brands do this. There's a reason why the Golden Arches looks like an M. There's a reason why the Geico Gecko has dominated that entire industry. There's a whole thing I said recently on entrepreneur.com about the Aflac duck. For years, Aflac, with that annoying comedian voice, came in Aflac, right? Mm-hmm. But their sales went through the roof because nobody forgot their name and they dominated their competition. But a CEO came in that didn't like it and thought it made them look cheesy and everything. So they got rid of the duck. And they saw their sales plummet and they saw their stock price plummet. So they got rid of the CEO and then
brought the duck back.
Yeah, the next CEO said, okay, we're the duck company. It's what it is. Right. And then they brought him back and everything. And there was some controversy about the guy who does the voice and all that. But at the end of the day, they saw their sales go back up because name recognition is almost the best thing. Even if people judge you on what brand you use, having that brand remembered is probably the most important thing you can have in business. It's like, love me or hate me, but don't forget me, right?
Don't forget me. So you've had success in your career. Maybe you could just share on the flip side. I'm sure there were challenges with different businesses. What do you think was your biggest challenge as you were moving into all of these different realms?
By far the biggest challenge was in, I would have to say it would be around 2014 when I was, making the transition to, it was a bit earlier, 2013, around there. But I was making the transition to doing PR full time, where I really had kind of a half and half business. I had employees take care of a lot of the PR stuff, but I was like kind of half and half. I also had a firstborn child. And we had a child at the same time as I was trying to change where my money was coming from, essentially, right? In order to make the transition between speaking fees and consulting fees, and those are two different markets, two different worlds, had to essentially restart. But I also saw the writing on the wall too that the speaking industry, because of the recession, actually, a lot of people were getting middled on their speaking fees. A lot of speaking fees were going down, and the memory thing. I had reached kind of a saturation point in a lot of ways, and there were other people in the memory business. So I saw more opportunity in where I was going. So I think So it's kind of like you have to have the faith that trust your instincts, and I knew it's kind of like what you said earlier, where a lot of people started in a particular field like PR, and then the world changed and they have difficulty adapting. And I've always tried to be the person who is always trying to adapt before the change happens, And then when the change happens, it's we're already kind of set up.
And then you can teach everybody else.
Yeah. Well, but it's not like being you don't have to be psychic and everything. The writing is on the wall, it's very clear what's going on and what's happening, but I think you can't live in denial. You can't think that the way you made money, in the last 10 years, is going to be the same way you'll do it in the next 10 years. You have to just kind of, make peace with the fact that things change. They change rapidly sometimes, but there's always a buildup before that big rapid change. The CDs and DVDs are a great example. We sold a lot of those and internationally and everything. And then there was a time where they were selling a few less and a few less and a few less. And then one day just boom, almost nothing. And we still have a few sales in those. We keep the stock around, but I've got it framed on the wall now, basically. So it's part of the past, in my opinion. And we're moving forward with my goal now for the coming year. For this will be done like 2019, is I'm going to have an online site that right now people pay for the whole course up front. It's like, say, like $100, $200, depending on what course they get for memory. And we're going to reboot that, and we're going to make it into a smaller monthly fee that gives you exercises each week. So it's more like like a personal trainer type thing. So we're always trying to be ahead of the curve. And I even feel like I'm behind the curve on that, but I'm still ahead of a lot of my competition on it. And that's what you got to do. You got to always be, looking like, where is this really going? And how can I get there before the next person? Because I guarantee you there's somebody else thinking the same thing. You got to react.
Absolutely. I mean, there are some really large brands that lost out on opportunity. It makes me think of Kodak. Eastman Kodak was doing so well, but they were relying on film. And they even saw the writing on the wall. What was happening? Everything was changing to digital.
Yeah.
And they just didn't shift the head.
Yeah, but like Fujifilm and stuff did very well. They actually have one of the best-selling brands for photographers. So it's not just it's not that you can't make these changes. BlackBerry is a good example.
But you have to invest in the change. Yeah. That's the thing. And sometimes people are not willing to invest, whether it's the capital or it's the people. You got to step out of your comfort zone.
Well, I come from Kitchener-Waterloo. That's where I grew up in Ontario. And our biggest example of that was BlackBerry, Research in Motion.
Right.
So
absolutely.
Yeah. And it was amazing to see the rise and fall of this company. And it seemed absolutely, insane because apps, they didn't get apps. Right. But the only reason why they were in business is because Motorola and Casio, I think it was, did not get the idea of putting a computer in a phone. So these people at Research in Motion, they made the smartphone, but then they didn't make it smarter. And then Apple came along and stuff. The only thing that I think honestly, a lot of brands have really missed the mark. I think Microsoft missed out on the opportunity to go mobile a ton of times, and they shouldn't have even shut down their latest attempt at mobile. They should have stuck it out because, now we only have two platforms, which is the Google platform and the Apple platform. And if Microsoft would have stuck it out a few more years, then they could have had a viable platform. They just didn't want to make the investment, but mobile is where it's all going to be.
Oh my goodness. Yes, absolutely. Okay. I'm going to ask you for some super quick parting advice for listeners about improving their careers and maybe paving their way to success.
Great.
So what would you say?
Okay. So number one, find out what you are really good at. And I mean, like in a basic sense, like get rid of kind of the academic mold and all the streaming and think of, all the different careers and just try to whittle down, like, what are you really good at? One of the things I was really good at is talking to people and being creative. And those are like my two biggest strengths. And then, then you can take those skills, no matter what your credentials, often you can take those skills and go into an industry. And as long as you are conscientious, you can succeed very well in that industry. The other thing I would also say is that, pick a time where work is going to be the absolute number one priority, and make sure your relationships and the rest of your life go along with this. Right now I'm at a very good position in my life. I'm not trying to brag, but I mean, I could basically live off my investments for the rest of my life. I could retire and live off of them and never work again and make six figures. But I don't want to, obviously. I want to keep going and all that fun. But there was a period of time where I had to just work. I mean, I'm saying 80 hours a week, probably. Right. And this was around the time when my child was very young. So it was very, very difficult on our family. My wife worked with me in the business. She actually handled sales until she took a step away. And I'm not going to pretend that was without any sort of conflict, obviously tremendous amount of conflict and arguments and all that at certain points. But it was always understand between the two of us that the business has to come first at this stage because we're building something, and it had to take priority. And very often, sometimes the arguments were that I wanted to spend time at home and not work so much. And she was like, no, I've got to take care of this and you're stepping on my toes. So it's not always the cliche argument of the workaholic guy, and the family missing them. It's often takes many forms. But I'll say that, it would be easier to do that in your 20s. For me, that was my prime time because in my 20s, I was in Canada. I didn't really have access to the American market. So when I was in the States, it was really the opportunity for me to make it or break it. The other thing I would also say is you have to take very big risks. you know, the bigger rewards come with the bigger risk. And oftentimes people don't think of the opportunity cost, that is what you're missing out on if you don't take the risk. And they tend to only think of what happens if you fail. You know, the vast majority of things, especially in business, failures are just going to cost you a little bit of money and a little bit of time. But the success is absolutely immense. You know, I've got a viable, you know, PR firm here that makes really good money, you know, month after month after month, that requires, you know, relatively little amount of maintenance. I made that initial investment. If I would have failed at that, I would have been out, you know, I would have spent maybe a year or two working on it and went, oh, I failed at it, right? But right. The other thing is that I've learned more than anything is that you can't really fail until you quit. You can't. If you keep on going, you just had a setback and you keep on going. So it is a matter of knowing when, you know, maybe you're being too pigheaded and moving forward in something that perhaps you should reconsider. But as long as there's a demand for what you're doing, as long as you've got some interest, then it doesn't matter what any negativity there is out there. I would just say, you know, keep on going, because you haven't failed until you quit. And as long as you refuse to quit, then you're a success.
Right. Refuse to quit. I mean, there's always resistance. Dave, great advice. Last question, and it's super easy. Where can people find out more about you and your work?
Well, I'd actually say the best, I am at davefarrow.com, but that is mostly about my speaking and everything. I would suggest you go to farrowcommunications.com. So that's F-A-R-R-O-W, you know, the F with the arrow on it. Yeah, see, it works, huh?
Yeah, it works.
And then the word communications, plural, with an S, .com. And you can actually sign up there. Anybody on your podcast, if you're interested in getting a strategy session with me, I usually, as you know, I bill my time at about $250-$350 an hour, but I do offer, you know, people coming in, you know, who are entrepreneurs who really just need some advice and everything. I offer a half hour of my time for free to do a strategy session to talk about their business.
That's awesome. You know what? Thank you so much for coming on the show. You've shared so many helpful tips about memory, and you've had a really interesting journey. So thank you.
That's wonderful. Well, thank you so much. And I love being on Women Worldwide. This is great.
We loved having you. And I also want to thank all of you for tuning into Women Worldwide. And if you can, just take a moment, rate Women Worldwide on iTunes. We'd love to hear your feedback. Okay, WW friends, until our next episode, stay focused, energized, and feeling empowered. Thank you.